Guys, Roland here. In this conversation that we are recording, which you're about to listen to, we get to discuss one of my favorite topics, meditating. And with me is a familiar guest on Conversations with Roland, who is going to tell us why you should meditate. You get to meet her right after this. Welcome to Conversations with Roland, where the goal of this show is to learn life secrets through diverse experiences. I am your host, Roland Achenjang. Guys, welcome to another episode of Conversations with Roland. As always, I am super excited to record these conversations, and today is no different. Today with me is a guest who is passionate about sharing her spiritual perspectives based on her personal experiences. She also mentors spiritual seekers so as to help them heal at all levels of their life and at all phases of their being. She has had many otherworldly experiences or spiritually transformative experiences, and she was able to share some of this at the latest 2021 online IANS conference with yours truly. And I'm talking about none other than my sweet friend Ritu LaBeouf. Ritu, welcome back. How are you?
I am great, Roland. So glad to be back with you. Your conversations with you are always delightful.
Likewise. And I think they are delightful, particularly because of the guests that I have on here speaking about experiences that they are super versed in. And so it makes for a wonderful conversation.
And this one especially because you are great at meditation, and I have heard so much about it. You've written about it, and you also mentor. So it's we are passionate about. This is a topic we both know very well about. And you ask true. The best questions. I've heard that from others also.
I appreciate it. I appreciate it. A lot of it is driven by my curiosity. Mm-hmm. Meditating is hands down my favorite thing to do other than take care of my baby and family. And I just love it for so many reasons. But it's really always a pleasure for me to connect with someone who has also taken advantage of the practice to help them grow, expand their consciousness, and get to a place where they can actually share the experiences that they've had in a manner that's helping other people who are new to the practice or even seasoned in the practice. Because by listening, they can learn something, pick up something new, and this goes for me too. So someone like you, super excited to talk to about meditating.
We all learn from each other. This is infinite process that we are talking about. So I'll share what I know and, yes, learn from you too.
Awesome. Before we get into it, you had an amazing summer. I know some amazing experiences have happened to you, and this is just because we speak every now and then, right? You had a brand new website design, which spiritualroute.com. I'll have links to that. Anyone who's listening, please check it out. And you can learn more about Ritu's work. And then you were also part of the last IANS conference. And you and I shared, you know, a platform together. And would you mind just sharing what that was like for you?
It was fascinating. And I felt blessed because it was like a trailblazing moment for all of us to come together and talk about the culture. We all come from different countries, different cultures, different backgrounds, and yet there are so many similar threads between all of us that there's a society, there's a cultural conditioning that gets in the way of spiritual process and progress. And to talk about it, that even though our spiritually transformative experiences or near-death experiences or spiritual experiences overall, have so many similarities, yet we all somewhere have had to overcome obstacles and find that courage within to keep pursuing and bring that information to people so they can learn to assimilate and integrate their own experiences. So that was fabulous.
No kidding. I thoroughly enjoyed the experience. I thoroughly enjoyed sharing the stage with you and the other beautiful women who were part of the panel discussion. And there's something that you mentioned there, which was really the underlying goal of our conversation. And that's kind of the similarities of after effects that happen when individuals from different backgrounds and different cultural upbringings go through spiritually transformative experiences, finding the courage to overcome them so that they can then share. And all of that really feeds into this conversation we're having today, because I know I sound biased here, but meditating seems to be one of those experiences that you can definitely take advantage of to transcend cultural limitations. Because it doesn't matter where you're from, you certainly can meditate and you certainly can use it as a tool to help you expand your consciousness, to help you grow and achieve, you know, a different levels of awarenesses that you're seeking. And we can start by asking you when you first learned to meditate and what that was like for you.
When I first learned to meditate, I cannot pinpoint a specific date or a certain time period, because ever since I knew, I was questioning how to go within. And there are so many different ways, thousands of ways of meditating, because the end result, the point is to bring your mind into a focus, ultimately to where you are, your mind is so still that you can then are able to look at your true self beyond that mind. So there are so many methods to it. So I think in some ways I was always practicing that because I was so intensely curious about what life is about, what is the meaning of my life, of anybody's life, and why, what is the purpose of us coming here? And so I was always searching and experimenting. I think I've been experimenting all my life, but in a more traditional way where you sit down with crossed legs and closing your eyes, that one started somewhere when I was in USA. And I started joining some of the groups that had advertised that they get together to do meditation. And it was just wanting to know their process of how they meditate. And so that is where I started learning, having experiences right away, and started learning that it's not just one way, that there are so many different ways, because no matter which group I went or joined or experimented with, I had experiences. So that revealed many inner truths, and I learned that ultimately I need to connect with my guru. So I've had I cannot talk about meditation without talking about my guru, right? In one of our previous podcasts, we have talked about my guru, Swami Mohandas Ji Maharaj. And to me, talking about meditation without talking about my guru is like talking about a gold necklace and saying, take the gold away and talk about the necklace.
Can't do that, right?
Can't do that.
So did he ever teach you how to meditate, your guru?
So the interesting thing is, with a guru like my guru, a perfect yogi with the all 1008 divine powers fully manifested in him, an enlightened master, he teaches each person, each disciple, according to their own tendencies. And with me, he took an exception, seems like it, which was so frustrating to me all the time until much later I realized how it phenomenally served me, is he did not give me any detailed instructions. So I've always been an experimenter. So all he told me was sit down with cross-legged, with your in Dhyan Mudra, which is, you know, thumb and forefinger touching each other on your lap, and keep your spine straight, keep your eyes closed, and focus on your third eye. That's all he told me, and he let me loose.
Those
so frustrating. But yet, that's not what he did with some of the other disciples. He gave them intricate, detailed, step-by-step instructions, which I found out later on. I'm glad I didn't find out at that time. I've thrown some tantrums, but I thought this is the way he deals with everyone. So that's how it started.
I mean, giving you that kind of very broad, I guess perspective matters. You could almost say those were also some very specific instructions, right? Sit with your legs crossed. Mm-hmm. He gave you the mudra to use, and he told you where to focus your sight. And he said, go try that. And to me, saying only those aspects of a meditating practice to you and telling you to go and experiment speaks to how much growth and advancement you as a soul would have probably already attained before this current incarnation. For him to recognize that and say, ah, you're at a level where this is all you need, and, you know, go like a kid on a playground and explore that and see what comes from it. I think that that's fascinating for you anyway.
I'd agree with that because I would say to validate that ever since I can remember back 3 years old, 4 years old, I had innate knowledge of reincarnation. I could remember three of my previous lifetimes. I remembered that I am the fully empowered one, but yet I am here to learn wisdom, to use power properly, and there'll be lots and lots of painful challenges along the way on this journey, and that I have to overcome them, I have to deal with them, I have to face them, I have to go beyond them. And that process will never end until I have processed it. It doesn't just because you're physically died, it does not end. It carries over, and it's just harder every time, next time. So you better hunker down and get on with it. So there were many of these realizations I already had, even though nobody external to me taught those things. So
So this was kind of like the inner guru within you that you incarnated with had access to this information, and you were able to use it essentially.
Right. And you brought up an excellent point, the inner guru, because the inner guru is always within us, within each one of us, no matter how much we think we don't deserve it, how far away we are from it. It's always within us. It's when we have either forgotten it, or it's in such a deep way, it's so hidden from us that we cannot have direct contact with it, that inner guru then comes out and as an external form, as an outer guru. And if that is a true enlightened master, then his entire job is to break whatever is the obstacle in between you, your awareness, and your inner guru. And that's his sole job. And
yeah. You know, Ritu, at the beginning of this conversation, you talked about the realization you came upon of the myriad ways in which meditation can be practiced. And it seems, regardless of how you practice meditation, you always ended up with this kind of deep spiritual connection, knowing or knowledge expansion, if you will. But with me today, I recognize that everything is really a spiritual experience. Everything is, this conversation is one. This was not the case before I started meditating. And one of the big reasons why I started what I call today meditating was to cope with work and school stress. And so many times people can approach meditation for different reasons, not necessarily a spiritual aspect. Now, with your experience, do you think that they can benefit from meditating to help with things like anxiety, stress, you know, anger, mental health issues even?
Oh, absolutely, 100%. Because, see, the process, like I mentioned right in the beginning, meditation is not just a certain technique, right? Because we've said there are thousands of methods. So what we're trying to get at is quietening our mind. Because we are the existence itself. We are the source itself. We are it. I am it. I am that. You are that. So we are already what in Sanskrit is called Satchidanand. We are the eternal one, the blissful one. That is our truth. That is our reality. Now, what is hiding it? What is covering it is our mind. And mind directly impacts our body. So any physical disease we are having is coming really from the imbalance of the mind. When we are functioning as a default, when mind is running our life by default, and we've given our power to mind, is when all these imbalances happen, and that manifests as what you call anxiety and physical diseases. So when the mind is quietened, when we've taken what we call being empowered, is taken that default control away from mind, then we are able to connect to the infinite source within us and come to balance. So it absolutely, you can approach it just to alleviate some physical ailment. It could be a sinus headache, or could be just some, you know, pain in the legs, or it can be for any mental issues or emotional issues. They're all taking you to the same process of getting to balance the control that you have given to the mind back to yourself.
You know, I could not agree with you more there. And when I asked you that question, I wasn't expecting this kind of answer, but I'm not surprised. I mean, like I said at the beginning of the conversation, you're super versed in, you know, this practice. And you're right. With my own experience, one of the big reasons why I kept going back to meditating is because of this innate healing that I was experiencing, which I could not explain, except to look back at what I was doing differently and pinpoint the fact that I was sort of meditating or paying attention to my body. Today, if you ask me, I'll say, oh, what I was doing was connecting with my higher self frequently. And through that, then I was finding out sort of these imbalances in the mind, like you would say, which I would also say were imbalances in my energetic imprint, which manifested my physical body. And as I cleaned that out through forgiveness, through understanding, through learning what the experience of having a headache or a pain in my shoulder was trying to teach me, then those were kind of released. And that translated into me feeling even healthier in my physical body. And the changes are constant. My dry eyes were gone. I had my back hurting so bad, I thought I needed surgical intervention from a pinched nerve that was gone. My body posture keeps changing. I mean, and it doesn't end. It's as though you can continue to feel better and look better. I don't mean look better as in, you know, like a vain, shallow way of, oh, I look pretty, that kind of thing. I mean, just feel better, look better, present yourself
better. Absolutely.
Yeah. And it doesn't end. It's like the more you spend time with your higher self or with your I am that presence, this inner guru, however you wish to describe it, the more you attain higher realizations, the more you're able to, you know, kind of eliminate the conditionings in your mind, and that translates to a better physical presentation of who you are. It doesn't end.
You put it very well, exactly.
Yeah. Now, so with meditating, again, there are so many ways to do it. This is kind of a very easy catch-22 question. Is there a wrong way to meditate?
I would say wrong. Two things that come up right away. There could be more, but two things that come up. One is your intention. Why are you wanting to meditate? So wrong way, it's not wrong way for someone else. It is could be wrong way for you. That if you have a preconceived notion of it should look like this, or if this is what I should be expecting, so that I can impress somebody else, or I can, you know, for ego boosting, that goes completely contradictory to what we're trying to do. Is mind is the ego. We're trying to put that aside. And if our intention is external, it has an external motivation, then it is a wrong way for yourself. It will just probably end to more frustration, and then you will want to give up something that is so beneficial. And then two is some very high level meditation, like yoga postures. I will, like, you've heard of tantra yoga.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, like that, which also sort of includes Kundalini yoga. It's very common. This is what I have heard from my guru and other yogis, that this is something should not be practiced on your own, because it is such a high powered, it is like you are pushing a million volt energy through a bulb that can hold only 10 volts. You know, it's something's going to go haywire inside, and you don't have the capacity yet to manage that. And there have many stories, documented stories, that have been written by some yogis who tried to do it on their own, something like that. And you will find many stories on internet where people went into instantaneous combustion, because we are dealing with the very powerful nadis, the energy fibers called Ida Pingala Sushumna. You're familiar with those. And so the heat can get so imbalanced that people have gone into instantaneous combustion. So this is something that my guru strictly warned against. And but other than that, it's open your heart, and you're doing it for some sort of benefit for you, to feel better, to feel happier. Any method works.
Okay. You bring up a very fascinating topic that many people have asked me about.
Okay.
And this is one I don't have much experience in.
Right.
That's the spontaneous combustion that I've been asked about that in the past. And with my own experience, that was never the case. And I think looking back on it, part of it had to do with my intention for, quote unquote, laying in my bed and listening to my body. To me, it was a last-ditch effort to cope again with work and school stress. And so there was no ego tied to it. It was actually a moment of honest expression of, I give up, right? Like, whoever higher power it is that controls the universe, I don't know what else to do at this point. Show me the way. What do I need to do? I'm just going to lay here, listen to my body. Through my body, reveal to me what you need me to do, because I am not myself, etc., etc., etc. And that's how my journey began. It wasn't a spiritual practice, not at all. But it soon turned to be one of those. And so when people have asked me about spontaneous combustions, I've just not been able to respond to it because that has not been my experience. And I did read about different meditations that you shouldn't try. Okay. I did come across people who were able to communicate with your guides while doing certain meditations. Mm-hmm. And through that, were then revealed not to do that particular meditation, that wasn't good for you. But in my case, it's not. Every time I've sat down to play with my breath, use my mind to kind of calm down, observe my beingness, if you will, it's been smooth for them. It's really been smooth. I've had some very interesting otherworldly experiences as a result. But I have not spontaneously combust, rightfully so, or else I would not be sitting here in front of you. But what do you say to people who come across that kind of information and then use that as a valid reason for why they shouldn't meditate?
You presented a very appropriate contrast between what something I had brought up about Kundalini Yoga and how you approached it. You know, it is when, like I said, intention matters a lot. So there are, you know, what is your intention? Is it, and it can be, mind can play, is a very clever, very, very clever tool, right? We can delude ourselves why we are wanting to do something. And so some of the people I have come across, when you ask them why, you know, it is really for ultimately for some sort of ego boosting, you know, because I will look so much more, I will perform so much better in my work, and why would you want that? You know, because then people will, ultimately, if you go into why, it's for, I will be respected more, I will be appreciated more, I will be looked up more. Do you agree with that? Am I right? So
yeah, and I've also seen instances. Sorry to cut you there. Mm-hmm. I just wanted to add this as another one I've heard is the desire to have otherworldly experiences as a reason to meditate, right? To go out of body, to astral travel.
So that's where we come into preconceived notions. Okay, so this is what I want. So this is almost like I am me, this limited, puny little thing, mind is trying to tell this unlimited source that this is what I want, you do my will. And so we come back to your intention. So my guru specifically said to every disciple, whenever he gave them any instruction, do it without any expectation of any kind. This may bring you some experience, this may never bring you any experience, but you do it because you are searching for deeper answers to your own self. Who am I? And if you are sitting with that intention, that I'm just looking for answers so I can know my true self, then let the source reveal to you where, because everybody comes in. Now, this is where reincarnation comes in. And I believe you are this great yogi from previous lifetimes. And that is why something so spontaneously like Kundalini awakening can happen to you and bring such enormous revelations to you. Now, sometimes I have come across people who have had a spontaneous Kundalini awakening, but they have not been able to handle it. And they have been very disturbed, gone into depression, gone into tremendous fear, and terrorized by it, and not have had that understanding. So my sum total of my conclusion about that is that somewhere when they practiced it, it was used incorrectly, or it was done with the wrong intention, where that bank balance of the effort that you put into it came forward with you. So something triggered it to for it to get awakened. But your other parts of you, your mind, your nervous system, your body, is not on par with it to be able to assimilate the awakening of the Kundalini that has happened. And so therefore, it is like there is a 18-wheeler truck with a small sedan car tires on it. And half of the tires are from sedan car and the other are from a SUV. And so it's like that. And that is where this intense science, deep science of yoga comes in. Yoga means yoke, means union, the true meaning of it. And so the ancient yogis from thousands and thousands of years ago, that is why when they bring it into practice for the meditation is just one part of it. The traditional meditation that we're talking about is only one aspect of it. And so they place equal emphasis on your body. That is where the Hatha Yoga comes in, which is widely known and practiced these days in USA. That is more of the Hatha Yoga. And then there is the pranayama, there is control of the breath, there is quietening your mind, there is stilling your nervous system, calming your nervous system. So all of that goes hand in hand. It's not just one. All of that is paid equal in attention, so that is in balance. So when you ask if there is one wrong way, that would be one. If your body is very weak and you are meditating intensely, you know, if something awakens within you, then it would be kind of hard for your body to assimilate that energy, because that's very powerful energy. And that's when you're kind of tripping over people who can't, I can't even hold my spoon. It falls off. It's like my body becomes too weak to handle that energy. So all of these go hand in hand.
I see. I see. So I wanted to add to this in that the very first moment I decided I would sit and listen to my body, I passed out because I was too tired. And in looking back, I realized it has happened multiple times when I would sit to meditate and then fall asleep. And I've appreciated that as actually a blessing. That's my highest of recognizing, well, you don't have the power to handle what we're about to show you. Your body needs to rest and recoup. And then usually when you sleep, take a quick nap, you get back up and you do the practice again. Then it's very expansive. You have that energy to respond to, you know, sort of the messages, the revelation, the expansion of consciousness that you go through as a result. And you spoke about yoga as well. Is there a way for you to describe what is happening to you while you're meditating when you are doing yoga poses and mudras? And what I'm trying to get at is, are these a result of energy moving through your body, especially if it's spontaneous? Or how have you, you know, been able to make sense of those kinds of experiences, if you've had them?
So there are two ways we approach yoga. Is one, when you're, let's say your meditation is not deep enough yet, or you've not had Kundalini awakened. Everybody doesn't have to have that awakened. That is a whole separate dimension of yoga, of inner awakening. Everybody doesn't have to have that. But if you've somewhere have had done that practice, or if you are from a lineage of masters where that's what they have practiced, then it's very natural that your Kundalini will get awakened. So do want to mention that if somebody's Kundalini is not awakened, does not mean at all that you are not moving towards spiritual progress, towards awakening. Because it can happen without it. Like I said, there are so many different pathways to the awakening. So there are two ways when your meditation is not deep enough and you're wanting to go towards on the spiritual path, spiritual progress, then you can take on certain mudras. Mudras are different hand gestures, or you can use many of the asanas, the yoga asanas, the postures. You can practice them, and that will then help you deepen your meditation. Now, on the other side with me, what happened was I did not know about any of these things. I had no preconceived notions. I had no clue. But when you have a master, a yogi, perfected yogi like my guru, then it's their grace that they can, combined with your previous lifetime practice, bank account you have brought with you, where you are on that journey, combined with that, if they deem it appropriate, with their touch, with their look, with their intention, even if they're sitting on the moon a million miles away, they can make that. It's like remote control. They can make it possible and awaken your Kundalini. And so I don't know if mine was always awake or partially awake, but when I started sitting down properly on a daily basis for meditation at one point, then the Kundalini awakened on its own. And it was just surging through my body. And I was automatically going into asanas and kriyas, something similar to what you described. And there was just vibrations. And what I learned was it's purifying whatever needs to be purified, the chakras. And it has its own timing. You cannot dictate anything to it. It takes over you and your body and your life. And it'll do what it needs to do unless you forcibly stop it, which you should not, which many people mistakenly do. And that can come from, you know, their just own internal fear or not having enough faith in their guru. Many people have stopped it. So I didn't. And it's just amazing. So what it does is, instead of me trying to figure out which mudra is good for me, which asana is good for me. You know, because there are thousands of mudras and thousands of asanas. This is intelligent energy. This is cosmic energy. And it is supreme intelligence. So it knows what is best for me, and it'll put my body into that mudra or that asana and the vibrations, whatever needs to happen, and the bandhas, you know, like we have mool bandh and things like that.
Yeah. You know, the one thing you spoke about as you were sharing your feelings or reflections about the question I asked was the cleansing that happens when your body spontaneously adopts these positions and the need for trust when this is happening. Because for someone like me, it was very scary. And I've told you this before. I honestly thought that I was possessed by, quote unquote, the dark side. You know, I thought, this is not normal. What have I done? I never learned anything like this in my Catholic upbringing. Why are my hands moving by themselves? What are mudras? I had never even heard of mudras until after my hands are doing this. And then I go research and I'm seeing mudras. And what was neat is I continued to go through the exact same experience you discussed. So much so that I could no longer go to a regular yoga class led by a different instructor.
Yes.
I really can't. Because when I go
to
that.
I can't either.
Like if I go to that class and I go through the flow that the yoga teacher or instructor has prepared, it actually puts me out of alignment. And I found that my own meditation would connect me to my higher self, who would then direct me into the yoga poses that I need to go to.
Yes.
And, you know, I did have preconceived ideas when I started having these experiences that would lead me to adopt certain yoga poses as well as the mudras. I didn't. But for the yoga poses, I did, because as a college student, I worked out regularly, and one of my workouts incorporated yoga classes and Pilates.
Okay.
And so there was a familiarity with the poses that I had been adopting in yoga class versus while I was in deep states of meditation. But there was a stark difference, stark difference in deep states of meditation when I would adopt these poses, poses, they were so blissful.
And effortless.
Effortless. And
completely.
And they were very precise. Like, I would move my pinky a millimeter and it would make a hell of a difference. Like, my entire body. My breathing was in sync. And there were times when I would breathe really fast and I would feel, like, heat exit the part of my body, or I would sweat, that kind of thing. Then I would calm down. And then I would move. And then the sounds that I would have never, ever, ever expressed when I'm doing yoga became spontaneous and automatic and a part of the meditation, where I would scream, or I would say yam or lam or any one of those things. And it continues to be fascinating that I'll have these experiences, not understand them. Now it doesn't scare me anymore because there's a huge trust in how much it's helping me develop. And then I would go and research and find out that, oh, that's what yam is. It's the three-letter word in Sanskrit for the heart chakra. Okay. You know, that kind of thing. So that continues to be my experience today. And I think, honestly, you're the first person I've met who has had similar ones where, you know, this energy moving and cleansing your, whether it's chakras, what have you, is resulting in you adopt these yoga poses that are blissful and serene and all that jazz. It's really cool.
So for me, I would say not so much now. Again, you know, what I want to warn against is someone listening to all the poses that you experienced, that someone expecting the same poses. This is what I mean by preconceived notion. It's like to expect that exact same thing would happen to them. that is when they're blocking their own flow, because that's not what they might need. And they may have something totally different, postures. So that's what I mean. And for me, really, there weren't so many postures as just vibrations and sensations. So a whole range of them. And there weren't so many of the postures, but mudras, sensations, and vibrations.
Yeah. You bring up a good point, and I'm glad you reiterated that a different individual will have a different path. And when I hear that, what strikes me as very important to speak, and this is coming from my heart again, is to slowly build on the trust that you are going down the right path. Mm-hmm. And a lot of it really is, you know, supported by the lack of a preconceived idea, the lack of, you know, forced path that you think you should take, and really, really more of a letting go and a trusting that this higher self, which is very much who you are, is going to support you and reveal to you what you really need, even though it might not be what you want. Mm-hmm. I think that that's important.
I'd like to add to that, for me, my guru strictly told me, do not focus on any experience you're having. It, you know, just let it be. Whatever is happening, just let it be. Like, just like you, when you sit for meditation, whatever thoughts that pop up in your mind, you just ignore it. You just let it pass by, bye-bye. And there's no reaction. So the same way he told me that these experiences, later on he told me that these experiences can become roadblocks if you're focusing on them too much, because they are just like milestones. They are just milestones along the way. So don't get focused on them, and they may or may not uncover some divine power. Do not focus on anything. You know, so it always reminds me of that TV show, game show, where they have all these doors, right? This is what you have in hand. You ready to give that up for something that's behind that door? So it's like that. These are like almost, I think maybe that's what Bible talks about as temptations, and that these are, they're called riddhis and siddhis when they start opening up, and so you are to ignore. So I would translate what he said in Hindi is like, yes, 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 it happens, you know, let it be, let it go. Mm. And so that's all. And so when you told me we were going to talk about this topic, and I started listing, it's like, well, let me go back and let me make a list of all the experiences that I've had during meditation and outside of meditation. I came up with 54 unique realizations and experiences that shaped whatever I do know and the awareness that I have. And I kind of stopped at that. It's like, I know we cannot share all of these, so maybe for another time. But it can. It can go that way if you just let them be. Don't focus on them. And that's what I did. Until finally in 2011, he told me, okay, now you can start sharing what you know, what your experiences were. So all these years, I was not allowed to even process, think about any of these. This is how much it can get in the
way.
In the way.
I appreciate that. And I will be honest, even in my experiences and practice, I've seen when past experiences have gotten in the way of my meditation experiences. And there are some tools that, you know, still meditating have been revealed to me as ways to learn to let things go.
That's interesting.
So one of them is, this is kind of funny, but thinking of it as shit, Like if you go to the bathroom and you poop, you don't hang on to it. You just flush it, you let it go, right? So think of think of your experiences as, oh, okay, it's come and gone. You've learned from it, move on. The other aspect that I was made aware of that I found very fascinating was this. If, say, I meditated and I had a really cool experience, and then I went now with the intention to meditate and have the same experience, I was really limiting myself in that sense because that experience is something I'd already had. Now I need to expand it. And what I've learned is when now I go to meditate, if I'm open, an even more expansive experience happens. It doesn't have to be the same one again. And I think that that is very important, and it kind of speaks to what you just alluded there.
I will add to that, if you don't mind. I'd love to add to that. So for quite a while, it happened that way, where I was just letting my experiences go. You know, even if I just had something minor ache or pain in my body, it was pretty much the same as just having any other profound experience, to say. It was just equal weightage to that. But then eventually, many years later, I came across certain groups of people who we were meditating, and they would all talk about they are seeing all these visions when they close their eyes, and they are seeing these lights and yellow lights and white lights and red lights and, I mean, all kinds of... I would confess that I felt like, oh my God, I am completely on a wrong path or something. My guru is not revealing something to me because I don't see anything. I was just pitch dark.
I'm glad you get a kick out of this today.
It's always pitch dark. I'm just... You know, it's like all the negative that you can tell yourself. I told myself that I am really not doing it the wrong way. But then again, you know, I just had learned to let go. Okay, well, he's in charge. And I say he is my guru. All right, if that's how he wants it to be, because I'm doing my thing, whatever I'm supposed to do, and this is what it's supposed to be. And then I did come across another saint and another enlightened master. And she, that was a female lady saint, so I couldn't help myself because there two people were talking about, ooh, I saw this and I saw that. So it's talking about the preconceived notions, right? So that was one time it got in my way because like, where the heck are these lights? I've been doing it all wrong all these years. Because I had no idea that you were supposed to see these lights. And like, mine is just pitch black. So that was one time I asked her. And it's like, all I see is pitch black. I don't see. And then, you know, she's like, you're different. Yeah. Don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. I'm talking to these other people. You know, you keep doing what you're doing. And that was, you know, like that little assurance I needed. It's like, okay, then forget it.
So that's
that can happen.
That's the beautiful thing about this practice and just how diverse the experiences every single person can have. And it does switch and it does change. And it's funny because the first time I actually did sit and listen to my body and not fall asleep, I saw the lights twirling in my eye, and I freaked out. I'm like, I should not be seeing this. On the other hand, you are looking for it. And I'm like, no, take this away from me.
Well, I will say that eventually there were other things. There were other things that I saw. But like I said, if I had gotten myself stuck on seeing those kind of lights that other people were talking about, I would not have been able to open up to eventually what did happen and the spiraling energies that started coming through. So everything has its divine timing, and we just keep doing our practice with the best intention.
Absolutely. You know, Ritu, another thing that I would really like to get your perspective on is the advice you would give to somebody who is new to meditating. What would you tell them about where to start?
This is when you ask me this, I am thinking about a whole lot of people that I have talked to, and they're all at a different point. Even though they're all beginners, they're all at a different point. There are some who have so much blockage inside of just the idea of sitting down, closing their eyes, and even being quiet for 5 minutes. So to me, I would say, really just start from where you are instead of forcing yourself into a certain technique. Now, the best one, easiest one, is just watching your breath, right? Close your eyes. Even if you don't want to close your eyes, just watch your breath. Because what we're trying to get at is quietening our mind, is watching all the thoughts that are coming in and letting them go, learning to not get carried away with the thoughts, or learning to not react to them. Like, oh my God, this happened again. There's no way I can meditate again. I got carried away with my thoughts again. Those are reactions. So gently, very kindly and gently to yourself, just bring yourself back to watching your breath. So something like that. Another one, anywhere you are, you have your finger, you have your hand, you have your nail, even your thumbnail. Just look at it and try to look at your nail without getting carried away with any thoughts. Like yesterday I did that with someone. It's like, well, what do you see? Okay, just look at your nails. Like, oh my God, I should have painted them pink. It's like, what thoughts can...
Judgment. I love it.
Or you was like, I should have had it. I loved it when they were longer. So just even look something simple like that. Looking at your nail, can you just look at it without even thinking this is a nail? Just like a camera lens is looking at it. Just like a two-month-old baby is looking at the nail. It doesn't know it's called nail, doesn't know it's pink color, doesn't know what color it is, doesn't have any label to it, cannot differentiate one thing from the other. It's just a shape. It doesn't know it's triangle. We've not taught that baby yet. It's a triangle, circular, square, doesn't know anything. It's just looking at the shape and just fascinated with whatever that shape looks like. There is no labeling. That's where the mind comes in, and that's what we have to quieten down. So if we can just look at it and just look at it, not have any thought, not have any label, not have any word associations following the initial thought, and not have any reactions to it. That is what we're trying to get at. So if just watching your nail helps you do that, or sitting down cross-legged with spine straight, or leaning against a wall, looking at the wall color and not processing that what kind of wall it is and what color it is, no physical dimensions, then that serves. That's meditation. So we can just start, or as simple, most Eastern philosophies talk about the importance of breath. So just watching your breath, going in, going out, being with it, and just watching how much your mind wanders, how much you get carried away. And that is a phenomenal realization in the beginning, that yeah. I did not know how much of my control is in the hands of my mind.
Yeah. I love those examples that you gave. And the one underlying takeaway from all of it is the ability to observe without interfering. Mm-hmm. Just watch. Some people use the word awareness. Just be aware of mm-hmm. anyone or anything, whether it's the wall, your fingernail, your thoughts, your breathing, etc. Mm-hmm. And I think I would agree that that's really a very nice place to start meditating if you're a beginner, right? Because from there, you can then start to add on different experiences, whether it's visualizations, etc., and all of that. And you can use that to enhance your practice. It's always so fascinating to talk with you, Ritu, and we are at about an hour here, which is...
Already?
Already.
That was like 10 minutes.
No, we're actually a little over an hour already. And the conversation was great. I mean, to learn about your experiences, to learn about your thoughts and feelings about meditation. And I feel like we should have another conversation because there are so many aspects about it, especially in trying to talk to a beginner about a path to take that we can delve into. And so how do you feel about coming back for another conversation?
Oh, absolutely. There is so much. And remember that list of 54... What I learned from it. I would love to share that. Absolutely. And it's such a time flew by. Yeah. And what I hear in the background is a little baby, which is exactly how we need to be. That is what divine message to all of us. Be like that. Just happy for no reason. And that's when you know you're spiritually progressing and you don't have any labels to anything and there is no thought process. So that's a perfect divine indication of where we need to be with our meditation.
Yeah, yeah. Come with a baby mind so you can explore and not think of a mm-hmm. nail as just a nail. It's way more than that. And what is it? Mm-hmm. With a meditative practice, you can explore and come educate us. Tell us what you find out when you look into a nail.
Oh, we're all learning from each other. So I would love to come back, learn from you, and share what I can share.
Yeah. Well, guys, we're right at the end here. And this has been perfect. This has been right about an hour. My baby Ira is here telling me she needs my attention. And as always, Ritu, it's such a pleasure to talk with you. And I can't wait till we get back together and discuss again. So
it's
thank
my
you.
Delight.
Thank you very much.
My delight and honor. Thank you, Roland.
Bye-bye. You're welcome. Guys, I'll have Ritu's website link in the notes section of this podcast. If you're watching this on YouTube, just look below. Connect with her. She's a wealth of knowledge when it comes to meditating, as my baby is making noise. And for me, RolandaChenJiang.com. And I invite you to create an amazing day. Ira.